Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to today's edition of The Big Picture here live on from the Durban studios of Radio Islam International, also with a live feed across to Radio Al-Ansar from what I'm told. My name is Mustafa Dawsar. I'm your host, standing by for Brother A.B. Dawji, who is unwell with a flu. He says, please remember him in your du'as. Anyway, talking about, you heard the news a short while ago, and they mentioned about the fires in Brazil and Brazil's president. Well, actually speaking, it was just a coincidence that the news reporter spoke about this. Obviously, Radio Islam will do the news finding information and what they need to broadcast. And today's topic coincides with that. So, we as Muslims tend to take certain things for granted. And one of the things that we are taking for granted or have been taking for granted is the environment. And, the environment... We forget that the environment is very important to us as Muslims. It's after all a creation of Allah Ta'ala, and we need a balance, an equilibrium, to have a good stable environment of nature, coupled with our material lifestyle that we are living, of urbanization, etc. Now look at currently what's happening around us. Take for example the weather. I mean, we in South Africa, well, today is supposed to be the last day of winter, and tomorrow being the 1st of September should be officially spring, right? Now, your winter season starts from the 1st of May over June, July, August, actually speaking from the 1st of June, but, if you take it into quarters, so you say from the 1st of June till the end of August, but the cold really sets in from the 1st of May, generally, or from the beginning of May till around now. And then you get spring coming in from tomorrow, which is traditionally your winter, autumn, winter, and spring seasons, right? We leave aside summer for now. Look at Durban, look at Johannesburg, right? Look at the weather that we've been experiencing, how erratic it is. I recall that last year in Durban, we had just two cold months for the year. It was July and August, that was it, right? Yet, I mean, and Durban winters, of course, I mean, the Joburg listeners will know that the Durban winters are the joke, and when Durban people complain it's freezing cold, well, really speaking, they don't know really, what is freezing cold when they go up country, beyond Pietermaritzburg, and know what is cold, and going further up to the Midlands and Johannesburg. So the thing is that what we notice is that last year we had two full months of winter, right? And that was it. And this year we had, okay, a bit of June was a bit cold with a few good cold spells. We had generally a good July except for one or two days. And August has been erratic as well. Take just 2 weeks ago on Friday the 16th of August, in the middle of winter, it was a Friday and the temperatures hit 35 degrees. Right? Take last Sunday, it was 33 degrees and still in the middle of winter. Okay, now, and then, we, at the moment, today, yesterday, and early in the week, it's been cold, raining, which is, what I'm trying to say is, it make you understand the background to what I'm coming to, right? Then I spoke to family and friends in Johannesburg. They said, yes, they had quite a few winter, cold winter spells. But generally, like this week, early in the month, etc., around eat time, even in July, they had a few hot days, which was, normal, right? Or should I say normal weather according to them. So the thing is that with this pattern of global warming that we are experiencing right here in South Africa, it's not only unique to us, it's happening worldwide. It's a global problem. You're having, some places with dry spells, you're having some places with heavy torrential rains, flooding on an unprecedented scale, you're having some places with severe winter, and then, but by and large, you're having hot climate. And, this is because of the negligence towards the environment, towards nature. Now, the root cause of this is the is materialism, right, fueled by greed and corruption. That's what the root cause is. Materialism fueled by greed and corruption. And we have to look at various situations around the world. And right now, the world is currently grappling with a serious problem in in Latin America, which is with the world's largest rainforest known as the Amazon rainforest. And it's burning. And there's fires at the moment on an alarming, unprecedented scale. And it's of concern because at the end of the day, if the Amazon is, if there's a certain tipping point, as what some researchers and scientists and NGOs have said, that it has a global catastrophic consequence, right? And it's not only restricted to the Amazon. Go to our side on the east. Look at Indonesia. Indonesia is a rich tropical jungle, right? Deforestation on a large magnitude. Apart from making way for urban development, okay, Indonesia has got a very large population over a very small land area of in excess of 250 million people. But, I mean, apart from the urbanization part of it, also the deforestation, the logging companies, the illegal logging, the burning of fires, you know, all the time that affect the countries around Singapore, Malaysia, etc. You know, you're having all that problem. Then you go into the, then you look at China, again, with rapid urbanization, you know, etc. There's been, you know, China has got some, you know, has got an array of different climates. You're having that problem. Look at within Africa as well. If it's, you know, you look at within the Great Lakes region, you know, looking at West Africa, where these are lush green environments, right? You're finding deforestation, you're finding mining activities that are, you know, basically have to, these areas have to make way. So all this is because of, you know, materialism fueled by greed and corruption. And now you have these fires that are taking place in the Amazon, and from what it's been reported, these are at alarming record levels. And just to, you know, point out a few things. For example, according to the, according to Brazil's National Institute for Space Research, it's called INPE, I-N-P-E, INPE, they spotted something like 9,500 new forest fires in Brazil since August 15, that's 2 weeks ago alone, right? And atmospheric monitoring agencies have tracked smoke from the Amazon region drifting thousands of kilometers across Latin American giant, across the Latin American giant to the Atlantic coast and Sao Paulo, right? Basically turning daytime in Brazil's biggest city to night last week, right? Now, the Amazonas, which is known as Brazil's largest state, declared a state of emergency on the 9th of August, while another state has been on environmental alert since the August 16 due to these fires. Several other countries in the region that have been affected that are also covered by the Amazon, Bolivia and Peru, which obviously border Brazil, have also seen a surge in fires, right? Now, INPE says that they've recorded from the beginning of the year till August this year 73,000 fires in Brazil alone. And the highest records began in 2013, and more than 80% bump on the figure for the same period last year. So just between now and last year, there's an 80% surge in fires. Right. Then NASA, on the 26th of August, they made an analysis and said that scientists using NASA satellites to track fire activity have confirmed an increase in the number of and intensity of fires in the Brazilian Amazon in 2019, making it the most active fire in that region since 2019, right? And said that, you know, that the state of Amazonas is on track for record fire activity for this year. Now, as we said, what causes these fires, I mean, what causes harm to the environment is materialism, you know, fueled by greed and corruption. But looking at the Amazon fires in context, right, fires obviously are a natural occurrence in any jungle environment, you know, particularly looking at Amazon in this time of the year, because it's known as a dry season. It's winter. It's in the southern hemisphere, it's winter, so winters are generally dry in the Amazon area, right? But according to the environmentalists and NGOs, they've attributed this record number of fires to farmers that are setting the forest alight, basically to clear land for pasture, for loggers, to raising the forest for its wood, and, you know, of course, but INPE has ruled out that natural phenomena have been responsible for the surge. Then you have the Brazil's president, who is a right-wing fascist. Now, Let's just tell you about Brazil's president, right? Brazil's president is, hair, like as in with an H, but it's spelled J-A-I-R, like J-O-S-E, Jose, you say J-A-I-R, hair, Bolsonaro. Right now, Bolsonaro is, I'll just, you know, for intents and purposes, refer it to him as Bolsonaro. Now, Bolsonaro has been a fascist right-wing leader in Brazil for the right-wing party that is in office from last year after winning the elections, or earlier this year, if I'm not, I can't remember actually. But anyway, he came into office after winning the recent elections, which have been dubbed as to be one of the most, cheated elections in Brazil's history. Now, he's come on the back of recent political instability that has rocked Brazil over the past couple of years, whereby you had another leader in power prior to that, what was a lady. I keep on, I hit a blank spot there. I forget her name. But anyway, it will come back to me just now. And she was there, and she was trying to put things right in the country. And she took over the legacy of her predecessor, Lula da Silva, who was a unionist, a socialist, who basically, when he was elected, I'm now going back now 10 years ago, or 11, 12 years ago, to bring about reform in Brazil. Because you must know, Brazil is also a very unequal society. Right, and the thing is that the one would say the immigrant white man that came to Latin America, like how they came to Africa, and you know, through colonialism, and you know, entrenched themselves economically through having certain advantages with the colonial powers of the time, and obviously are now, you know, ruling the economy and running the economy. And you must know, Brazil is considered to be one of the richest countries of the world. It is the largest economy of Latin America. It hosts, Sao Paulo, which is a thriving metropolis in, which is known as the business hub of the country. Latin America has got amongst the two largest cities in the world. One is Mexico City, which is considered the largest city, and the other one is Sao Paulo in Brazil. Sao Paulo is dubbed the New York of Latin America. So you have this country here that was, basically it was under Portuguese colonialism, and then thereafter, you had independence, and then they, the white man, if you want to put it in inverted commas, was ruling the country. You have a significant black population in Brazil that were brought in as from Africa as slaves during the slave era. Then you have the indigenous Latin American Indian, who has been the ethnic, who have been the original, indigenous of that country. So you have this melting pot of three, basically major, nations: white, African, and the indigenous. But the white man was running the country, and still does. Right, economically they are powerful, like how you see here in South Africa. Economically they are powerful, and in many countries, right? So what happened was that Brazil wanted to take back, because capitalism, of as we know it, has been the order of the day and has been ruling the roost economically. And then what happened was that the your average working class, your unemployed, your indigenous was suffering, right? And opportunities denied, etc. So then came the socialist, the era of socialism that woke up and decided, listen, we need to take our country back, and we need to get our country onto an equal footing. We're not bringing in communism, we're not bringing in nationalization, but we want to bring in more fairness into the economy, right? So that's when Lula da Silva came in. They're followed by his successor, who was our lady. As I said, the name has just hit me with a blank there, but anyway, then she was impeached while in office. And the whole, if you look at the whole scenario as to how she was impeached actually through a series of events which stemmed off from a so-called scandal from Lula da Silva's time. And, you know, obviously now, because she was a successor, so made it seem that she is now responsible, and, you know, had her basically removed from office and replaced with a temporary president who was from the right-wing cabal, and basically ran the country until they had elections. And, you know, now you've got Bolsonaro, who is in office. Bolsonaro admires Trump, right? He loves Trump. He's an ally of Trump. He's a friend of Trump. The other hero that he has is Netanyahu. You know, he's very Zionist inclined, or should I say he's a pro-Zionist. You know, so Netanyahu is his other hero. He's also, because of BRICS, so he's also he's got very close ties to Putin in Russia, Xi Jinping of China, and of course Modi as well. Now, the thing is that looking at this scenario, Bolsonaro has made it very clear, right, that even when he was running for elections, it was out there that at the end of the day, he is business comes first. You know, of course, in any country, to any president, to any head of state, the economy does come first, without a doubt, right? But we're talking about in the context of looking at this scenario, and it was mooted that that when he comes into office, right, that he is going to, one of the first things that he's going to basically tackle, or should I say, he's going to continue with a policy of deforestation of the Amazon rainforest, right? Now, the thing is that if you look at the Amazon rainforest, right, it is vast, it is huge. The country is so huge as it is, there's enough land, so there's enough, you know, with the population that Brazil has, there's no need to basically go and, you know, kill the forest, if one wants to put it that way. So he's there to basically, you know, benefit himself, his inner circle, and his cronies, you know, for massive industrialization, production, and property development, right? And that's why this deforestation has been carrying on. And suddenly he comes into office and it's just gone up, you know, it's like from day one, this is part of his policy. And then when this fire took place, or when this fire started, there were calls from the international community, from NGOs, from activists, from the name it, the UN, etc., that this is very important and we need to do something. And Macron says, no, it's just a fire. What you want? These fires happen all the time, every year, this year, you know. Until, obviously, now, you know, and we must, you know, thanks to social media, thanks to alternate media, that this has, snowballed on a grand scale and has been exposed, that now he's been caught with his tail between his legs and has to address this matter, this very challenging problem. And from a don't care attitude, now he's suddenly showing that he's concerned and he wants to do something about it. He even visited, there's been on media that he's visited the affected areas, went on a helicopter ride, etc. And now he says that, he brought the army in, he will consider an offer that was made by the G7 recently to offer $20 million to help fight the fires, which he rejected out of pride, says that this is going to be, this goes against Brazil's national sovereignty, whatever that's supposed to mean. But the thing is that you've got a global disaster on your hands and countries are offering, yeah, it can be whoever it is. I'm just saying at the end of the day, and to have this sort of attitude shows that he wasn't bothered, right? Until the outcry overwhelmed his don't care attitude. And this is the mindset that you have amongst, unfortunately, the right wing and those who are greedy, right? That it comes to money first, not economy first, money first, and not just money first for myself, for my friends, and my cronies, right? That's what it is at the end of the day. Anyway, we're taking a short news break. We're taking a short ad break. We will be back shortly, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum. Okay, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the big picture. Yeah, we were talking about the Brazil's president Jair Bolsonaro's attitude towards the current fires in the Amazon. Now, and I was talking a bit about his background. Anyway, nevertheless, thanks to, while I was watching in the I managed to refresh my memory. Yes, the Brazilian president who was ousted, the lady president was Dilma Rousseff, who was, if you all recall, when at Mandela's memorial in December 2013, she was one of the four leaders that spoke and at his memorial service. She was, you know, trying to get the country on a good footing, you know, following the successes of Lula da Silva. However, she was then, you know, in the second term of office, you know, through some scandal, impeached by the right wing, which was instigated by the right wing, and then succeeded by caretaker president Michel Temer, who has coincidentally Arab roots. And then Michel Temer ran the country for a while till Bolsonaro got elected and has been in office from the 1st of January this year. And one of the things that he's neglected, and it was part of his, you know, intention, it was to, you know, was the Amazon rainforest. Now, given Bolsonaro's links, now he has, you know, not so long ago during the G7 summit, he was approached, you know, he was offered by the G7, you know, $20 million in aid in order to you know, to save the Amazon fires. Plus, there was also separate offers made by the UK, by the Canada, and I think in the UK as well. And he rejected all these offers because he cited that this is, you know, will harm Brazil's national sovereignty, whatever that's supposed to mean. It was more of out of pride. And then when Macron was criticized his, you know, his refusal to take on the offer, given the emergency situation, given that he has threatened to pull out from the Paris Climate Accord, knowing that his mentor Trump has already done so so blatantly, then Bolsonaro went and made this a very personal matter by attacking Macron's wife. And, you know, he went, you know, and made this very personal and said that, you know, by insulting his wife and said that, you know, about her appearance and saying that, you know, look at his wife compared to my wife, etc., you know, and that sort of pettiness, you know, childish kind of rhetoric. But then you can understand from the mindset where he comes from. I mean, this is like Trump. If you see how Trump's behavior has been, I mean, because he's the president of the USA, because he speaks English, because he's, you know, he tweets a lot, so obviously people take more notice of Trump. But Bolsonaro has been no different since he's become president. He's just the same. In fact, will say one thing and do another thing. He will contradict himself. He will, you know, it's, you know, basically, it's, you know, to give the deceptive front to others that, you know, this is, you know, in the meanwhile, it's what he personally gets out of it. And being so close to the right wing, you know, cabal around the world, Netanyahu is his mentor. Also, he's made it very clear, even during his election rallies, that, you know, when I get elected, I will move the Brazilian embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. So he has made an announcement. When it will happen is another story. He's been courting the, he's even divided Brazil's Jewish community. There's over 100,000 Jews in Brazil that we know of, and they have been divided because some of them are considered themselves to be liberal, and while the others are Zionist. And there's even been Israeli flags at his rallies, and with a strong anti-Palestinian stance. And then he, you know, he says that we see Israel as central to the apocalyptic, you know, scenario that the world faces. Then he's been having a bromance with Viktor Orban, who is the nationalist right-wing prime minister of Hungary, right? Now, for those who you know about Viktor Orban or don't know, was that he was the one that said he's going to build a wall around Hungary to keep out the refugees that are running away from Syria and Yemen and Afghanistan, etc., and Iraq. So, and he doesn't want Muslims in his country. So you have that. And then there's also the, with the Polish right-wing Prime Minister Morawiecki. So, you know, this is the type of mindset. So when you have this right-wing mindset, when it's, you know, when of superiority, of white nationalistic, white supremacist, you know, kind of attitude, it's only for us and to hell with the rest of the world, right? And so you have to look at it from that context and to see that how it's business, it's money first, and it's what it's for us, and to help, you know, everything else is secondary. So they don't mind if the environment is sacrificed, if, you know, as long as they got their money, their Swiss bank accounts and offshore bank accounts are full, overfilled, and, you know, they feel that the money that they've accumulated is for future, for their future generations and their family. That's all that matters to them. So, you see where this is coming from. So the but as I said, thanks to, and this is also according to reports on Al Jazeera, etc., and all various media, says that only social media users around the world have been able to, you know, take this to another level, because the outpouring of concern, grief, and anger is unprecedented. Right? This is what is creating a lasting impression for people that the Amazon is absolutely essential to our future, and we all have a responsibility to protect it, contrary to what Bolsonaro may say. Right? We can't allow ourselves to fall into despair. There's no other way. We have to act. We have a responsibility to ourselves, to future generations, and to others on this planet, of which are suffering today as a result of the chaos. And this is according to some of the NGOs. But Marwan Bishara, which many of you know is a regular political analyst on Al Jazeera, has come out and said that when pyromaniacs lead, referring to the guys like Trump, Bolsonaro and company, Putin, etc., the world burns. And he says that at the global crisis, right, as the global crises are pushing the world towards disaster, the G7 could not even agree on a final communique. He says that watching the fires ravaging the Amazon rainforest ahead of the G7 summit, I cannot help but think that Mother Earth is trying to tell them something, to warn them all of the grave things to come if they continue to avoid collective action on the big challenges facing the globe, including climate change. But is anyone listening, really listening? Certainly not the firecracker, Brazilian President Bolsonaro. He first dismissed concerns about the gravity of the situation that went on, rather disingenuously to accuse, and this has been his attitude. He actually accused NGOs of starting the fires, while his supporters condemned the Western outcry as imperialist interference in sovereign Brazilian affairs. He even rejected the G7's albeit modest pledge of $20 million in aid to help put out those fires. Right? And then he talks about, further in the article about the global warming effects, about the fire triangle. When he says fire triangle, he says conflict like fire has been with us since the dawn of human civilization, and new conflicts like new wildfires are caused by a fire triangle. For wildfires, that is fuel, dry trees, heat, dry wind. For new conflicts, that is inequality in standard of living, human rights, etc. Tribalism, which is populist nationalism, sectarianism, and globalization. So you see the white supremacist angle, the right wing don't give a damn attitude, right? Then he quoted the famous author Amy Chua, who wrote in a book in 2003 called World on Fire, where she explains how exporting free market democracy breeds ethnic hatred and global instability. She argues that globalization, contrary to post-war conventional wisdom, has been a disruptive and destabilizing force around the world. So, and then he talks about the looming conflicts, right? He says, needless to say, globalization has not invented tribalism or inequality. In fact, it has helped elevate countless people out of poverty and connected the world like never before. But globalization has highlighted inequality more starkly than ever before, locally and internationally. So, and then he says that they only agree to disagree. The world is still not worse off. It was, say, during the 2003 Gulf War, let alone during the 20th century wars. But make no mistake, the economic and strategic conditions for conflict are stacking up as they did before each of these horrific events. He says, with the G7 and international institutions paralyzed, the leading powers, China, Russia and the US, are seemingly embracing the foolish notion that it's best to fight fire with fire in their reckless competition for power. If they persist unchallenged, they're bound to set the world on fire. Read that article by Marwan Bishara on Al Jazeera. It's called "The When Pyromaniacs Lead, the World Burns." Then there was another article in Hong Kong's daily newspaper called the South China Morning Post. It says that the fires in the Amazon rainforest are actually fueled by a U.S.-China trade war. Right? Now, according to this, it says that economic opportunities provided by tariff disputes are pushing Brazilian beef and soybean farmers to turn their backs on decades of good practice in the region, right, according to researchers. Meanwhile, Bolsonaro is undermining Brazil's amazing policies on land protection by lowering fines for environmental crimes, according to ecologists, right? So, like if you look at how Trump has been behaving, talking about that, coming to Trump now, according to Time magazine, and this is an article this week, and I'll just read a short part of it, right? It was headlined that why President Trump cut a methane gas regulation that even the big oil companies wanted to keep. It says that Trump's administration announced this week the rollback of an important environmental regulation on methane emissions that even some of the world's biggest oil and gas companies support. The fact that big oil backed a regulation designed to stem emissions of a potent greenhouse gas was immediately wielded by Trump's critics as evidence of how backward the move must be. Right? But the reaction must have important takeaway. The oil and gas industry was split on the Environmental Protection Agency methane rules, with some prominent companies supporting them and many smaller producers pushing for the elimination. Right? The EPA's decision to side with a group of smaller fossil fuel firms shows the influence these obscure companies retain within the Trump administration and the power they have to slow climate legislation as addressing the issues grow more urgent. Right? The split within the industry is partly a matter of scale. The EPA regulation, which required oil producers to implement a range of measures to stop natural gas leaks at new drilling sites, keeping methane from entering the atmosphere, posed little threat to big oil and gas firms, which could easily absorb the compliance costs necessitated by the 2016 rule. Right? This methane rule came out in 2016. And because big energy companies natural gas, the rule actually just forced the companies to do a better job capturing their own product. The more gas we keep in our pipes and equipment, the more we can provide to the market, according to the president of BP America in an email statement explaining the company's support for the measure. But there comes Trump with his tweets and, of course, with his sledgehammer, and he just, breaks the legislation, like how he unilaterally pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord. Now, we as Muslims, I spoke to earlier, that it's our responsibility to look after the environment. And why is it our responsibility, right? And why should we keep tabs, especially on this current situation in Amazon? Now, there's been a number of verses in the Holy Quran that point towards being mindful of our consumption of the resources bestowed upon us by Allah Ta'ala. We are told to not cause corruption on this earth because Allah does not love corruptors. This corruption does not only point towards greed in our everyday lives or in our business activities, but it also tells us that we need to use our resources sustainably in a way that does not prevent the next person from benefiting from these resources. It is our religious and social obligation to make an interest in environmental matters, right? Our beloved Prophet Nabi Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam dealt extensively with various aspects of the environment as well. The most popular hadith on environment states, "The earth is green and beautiful, and Allah has appointed you His stewards over it." Now, truly, this is a reiteration of the Quranic teachings. Of what the Quran teaches us as human beings, that we must be official custodians of the natural environment. So when we see these disastrous effects of overconsumption, materialism, by man, or greed by man, which affects people, animals, and ecosystems that are functioning, not only locally, like for example for the Amazonian tribes, but also globally, it is our duty as Muslims to stand up against this. Our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam clearly forbade the destruction of trees. Now we are facing deforestation of the lungs of our planet. This is a catastrophe. So you see, when we say that how important the environment is, and for us to preserve as Muslims, another saying goes, cleanliness is next to godliness, right? So these are very important things, and that we must be aware of. That I mean, you know, take for example an area that where you see now, you take for example now here in Durban, right? If you remember the Amshlanga, the upper Amshlanga area where Gateway is now and the entire Amshlanga Ridge and La Lucia Ridge, if you remember that area prior to the year 2000, 2001, when Gateway opened, I think in 2001, yes, prior to 18 years ago, right? There was just a little suburb above, you had Amshlanga Rocks where you had the hotels, etc., on the in the main town, and you had a little suburb above it, that was it, right? Look at it today, it's a city, right? What made way for that city? The environment, all the greenery. Yes, we understand that there's populations are growing, there has to be urban development, but it can be also, if that urban development is carried out responsibly and properly. Now, nobody's pointing fingers to say that what happened in Amshlanga was wrong, but that's not the, what I'm saying is that if you look at the scenario, now take that, multiply that throughout, that effect throughout the world as a domino effect. That if you're going to chop down all your green environment, whereby the ecosystem depends on it, animals depend on it, indigenous people depend on it, we depend on it for our food, what are we left with? We're going to have basically a whole urbanized world where we'll have no green to give us our fruit and vegetables. We're going to have, they're not going to feed animals, so we're going to have no animals. What's going to happen? So you see, the thing is, as what has been said in the Quran and in the Hadith, that you must consume, but only consume enough so that you do not deprive those that come after you, for it is also their right and their hak to enjoy, partake of this. And this is what also, if you go across now to Kashmir, this is what's happening there. One of the things that Modi has used, I mean, part of the election manifesto which he launched on the 8th of April this year, to say that when we get re-elected to government as the BJP, we are going to take back Kashmir and we're going to revoke Article 370 and Article 335A. And one of the things he kept on touting is, he did that prior to the last elections in 2014, is that we want to build India's economy and grow India's economy. India is going through serious challenges currently on the impact on the environment, right? Yes, you've got 1.3 billion people, but remember, all that economic development and all that projects that are coming about by that is not there to benefit. You still got a very large lower class, unemployed, poverty-stricken, grassroots population, and they are not benefiting from this at all. It's only the mega rich. Yes, you're having a bit of a rising middle class, but that middle class is also having their problems because they cannot cope with the cost of living. In fact, you take, for example, in Surat, where you have, which is known as the diamond hub in the world after Antwerp in Belgium, there's been a lot of suicides because what happens is that what the, these are middle-class people who are now want to embrace a better standard of living, so they commit themselves to buying a nice apartment in a nice block, etc. But they realize, hey, wait, we cannot keep up this lifestyle. And unfortunately, they're taking out their lives. Same is happening with the farmers. Right, where prices are just are ridiculous, and they're not getting what they deserve for their crops, etc. They can't meet their bills, they're taking their own lives. So if you look at Kashmir, right, what's been happening in Kashmir is one of the things that Modi touted is that we're going to develop Kashmir. But wait a minute, who are you going to develop it for? Right, Kashmir is a lush, it is known as Jannat on Earth. I've been there, alhamdulillah. I wish I went there for a longer period of time. I went there in the winter when it was freezing cold. I was looking forward to making another trip in the spring or summer, because to see it in that green, but you see it on TV, etc., how beautiful this place is. And, the thing is that, yes, Kashmir needs development, obviously, to uplift the economy, but whose fault was it that the Kashmiri people were deprived of having a proper economy in place? It was the occupying Indian government, right, that, that was supposed to allow the autonomy of Kashmir to continue, and then they, reneged on that promise. Even, 50 years ago, it was last addressed at the United Nations. So this is not only a unique thing to the BJP. It has started from the time of the Congress, from Nehru's time, but obviously what the BJP has done is that it's now Israeli style done an official occupation of Kashmir by revoking Article 370 and 35A. And Reliance, being India's largest company, right, headed by the wealthiest man in India and amongst the wealthiest in the world, Mukesh Ambani, has said that we are going to develop Kashmir, and because we are responding to the call of our Prime Minister. But how are you going to develop Kashmir? You're going to need to buy that land in Kashmir. And Kashmir, the Article 370 said that non-Kashmiris cannot come into Kashmir and buy land and own land. It was only for Kashmiris. Now with the revocation of that law, right, and given that there's a lockdown and a Gaza-style blockade siege over Kashmir, what's going to happen is that people are going to be miserable, they're going to be starving, they're going to be, you know, desperate, and they're going to part with their land. And who is going to buy the land? The greedy corporates, right? One of them is Reliance, right? The Arabs, because that's why the Arabs have been when I say Arabs, I mean not the Arab people, the rulers of the Gulf states, the types of Mohammed bin Salman, Mohammed bin Zayed, etc. Those, you know, the corrupt elite, right? They are the ones, because what happened is that Reliance made this announcement on Eid Day on the 12th of August that we are going to develop Kashmir, and the next day MBS announced major investment into Reliance, acquiring a 20% stake worth $75 billion, right? And the thing is that the UAE, which has a very which is considered India as its second largest trading partner, right, you know, with a two-way, with multiple investment by India in the UAE, right, and we're talking mind-boggling figures of $55 billion, right, have been, you know, earmarked to join them in joint venture projects with Indian companies to develop, and I put it in inverted commas, Kashmir. So you're going to have land that is now going to go from Kashmiri into non-Kashmiri hands, right, under Modi's, you know, bizarre thing that, oh, you know, we are there to uplift the people, right, and we even bring in Muslim partners. But who are Muslim partners? Those Mohammed bin Zayed and Mohammed bin Salman don't represent the Muslim world, so and they only want it for themselves, so they're not there to benefit the Kashmiri people who are majority Muslim. So you have these sort of things happening, right? And it's going to, you know what the reports we're getting back is that it's going to cause a serious destruction to the environment, right? And you know, you just have to look at the awards that Modi has been getting. He didn't get those awards for nothing. He got those awards for a reason, right? And if you look at the awards that he received, right, he received from Saudi Arabia during his first term in office in April 2016 the King Abdul Aziz Award, right? Then in June 2016 he received an award from Afghanistan called the Amir Amanullah Khan Award. Okay, Afghanistan doesn't have the money to obviously throw into to these projects, but the thing is, again, honoring Modi. Then he visited Palestine last year in February after he had the grand scale reception for Netanyahu in January, right, there back in India. So he had to, because India has been very pro-Palestine, or supposed to have that foreign policy that was pro-Palestine, he had to basically appease his critics, and he went on a visit to the West Bank to meet with Mahmoud Abbas. So the Fatah government gave him the Grand Collar State of Palestine in February last year. And then this was followed by another award by the Maldives president to give him the Rule of the Nishan Izzuddin Award in June this year, right? And then just last week, he received an award from the UAE, right, being the highest civilian award known as the Order of Zayed, and in Bahrain, given the King Hamad Order of the Renaissance Award. Now, the thing is that here is, you know, these awards are there because they are there to build strategic alliances. And take the Maldives. The Maldives is complaining that with the alarming rise in sea levels and with global warming, that very soon, right, there will be no Maldives left, because there is no high ground above 1 meter. The highest ground level is at 1 meter above sea level. So that's what happens. And now all these guys are running behind and Modi, and they're having partnerships, and they want to, you know, get into business projects and development, etc., at the expense of the environment. It's just mind-boggling. So therefore, in conclusion, we said, and I read out the hadith that says that you know how important it is and what the Prophet has said, and we have to take this into consideration and do our best as Muslims to speak out responsibility and actively about that our environment matters to us, because it is important to us, it is part of our life, and it is a message by Allah Ta'ala. Anyway, Jazakallah for having me on the show and for listening to me, and As we said, make dua for brother AB, who's got this very bad bronchopneumonia flu. Hopefully he should get out of it and you'll be able to listen in tune soon. And you've been a great audience. Jazakallah once again. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.